Hello and welcome to Bardcast, the Shakespeare podcast, episode 2, Reading Shakespeare. I'm Carson.
And I'm Jeff.
Although this episode is titled Reading Shakespeare, I think it's more accurate to call it something like Consuming Shakespeare. Because
we probably should have called it that then.
Well, it's just this is easier to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we've got all sorts of media that you can consume Shakespeare with, and obviously there's the plays. I think that both of us would advise someone to go to a play if they want to.
Oh yeah, the best way to see Shakespeare is in theater with a real cast, not high schoolers. I mean, they're okay, but you know, they're high schoolers.
I think that the high schoolers and people like that, they kind of have the thing where they're more reading the lines, even though they've memorized them. They're just saying them.
Right. There'll be a couple good ones, like good actors out there, but for the most part, it's just we needed filler.
Yeah, people don't understand that these people are supposed to be real people saying things that concern themselves. So instead, they're just saying, to be or not to be, that is the question, blah, 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 blah. No intonation, no, as though they're talking to each other. They're just reading their lines, hoping to get done with the thing.
Basically, the more you pay for it, the better it'll be. That's how things work, right?
Yeah, I think so. So, plays, obviously, you can go to. Here's a quick question. Do you think it's better to read the play in advance, read a summary of the play in advance, or just not have any experience with it at all before you go to the play?
That's a difficult one, because every time I've seen a play, I've read it in advance.
And do you think that really helped you in your experience of the play?
I'd say, for the most part, it does, yeah. I mean, by reading it, you'll get a different impression of characters than you see, and
right.
Different performances of the same play will also just have different characters. Even with all the same lines, they can still act differently and give you a completely different impression of what's going on.
Absolutely. I also think another thing to do with reading before you go to a play is you probably at least want to have an idea of what it's about so that you can follow it, because sometimes you can fall out of what people are saying because they'll be using words you don't really understand, so you can lose track of the premise of the play and the direction of the plot.
Plus, there's no guarantee that they'll come out and say on stage and say, by the way, I'm playing Claudius, and I'm playing Hamlet.
That's true. And sometimes people go with more abstract performances of the play, where I think they assume that you know what's going on, because no sets, no wacky costumes, stuff like that.
Yeah, if you keep mentioning abstract plays, you're going to have to use the bleepy button.
Okay. So that's obviously the best way to read Shakespeare. Well, it's the best way to consume Shakespeare. The best way to read Shakespeare is just to read the play.
Yeah. I mean, there are different ways to do that, though.
Right. I've got this very large, obviously, it's about the size of the Bible, I'd say, copy of all of Shakespeare's works. It cost me only $20 at Barnes & Noble.
Great store, by the way. Great store. Did I mention I worked there?
Corporate chill for no money. Yeah, $20, you can get all of Shakespeare's plays and his poetry. I think it's a great deal, regardless of where you get it.
As long as you don't actually read the poetry.
I've heard the poetry is good. I haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, some of it's okay. I'm not a huge fan.
Well, I'm sure it's a product of its time, like everything else.
Well, that's not my real issue with it. He's got 100-some sonnets, and there are 5 good ones.
Ooh, that's a very harsh judgment on the sonnets. I guess we can talk about that more when we get to them.
Yep.
So, if you don't want to read an actual book, you can read the Cliff's Notes.
No, never.
I also think that reading Cliff's Notes is a bad idea, partially because the plays aren't even that long.
Well, some of them are kind of long.
But I mean, they're not even the size of...
Like all the Henry VI.
They're about the size of a short story instead of a, you know, book.
I wouldn't go quite that far.
Okay, they're a long short story.
How about they're a short novel length?
Sure, whatever. Either way. Cliff's Notes, I think, are only good for their description of the plot. Like, you know what happens, because sometimes it's hard to tell just because they'll say stuff like, what fardels bear in the to-be-or-not-to-be speech. I mean, that means it's what burdens bear, but fardels isn't a word that we use. So when they're saying stuff like...
When you say it's not a word we use, you actually mean it's not a word.
Not anymore. And
not ever.
And at the beginning of Taming of the Shrew, where he says, "I'll feeze you in faith," that just means nothing to a modern-day audience.
Shakespeare invented a lot of words, and not all of them stuck.
Well, we'll talk about that later, the inventing words part. And I think a better way to get a feel for what he's talking about is this book I actually have with me. I got it at the library, called No Fear Shakespeare. It has the entire play in it on the left page, and it has the translation into modern English on the right page, as though it were a story in a foreign language, which in a way, it's approaching that.
Yeah, a lot of schools are actually assigning the No Fear Shakespeare version.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Just so people can get an idea for what it's about, I've got the To Be or Not to Be speech on No Fear Shakespeare, and I'll just read it a little bit. This is by Hamlet, obviously.
Yeah.
The question is it better to be alive or dead? Is it nobler to put up with all the nasty things that luck throws your way, or to fight against all those troubles by simply putting an end to them once and for all? Dying, sleeping, that's all dying is. A sleep that ends all the heartache and shocks that life on earth gives us. That's an achievement to wish for, to die, to sleep, to dream, maybe to dream. Ah, but there's the catch. In death's sleep, who knows what kinds of dreams might come after we've put the noise and commotion of life behind us. There's certainly something to worry about. That's the consideration that makes us stretch out our suffering so long.
We're not saying that it's a good idea to ever perform the No Fear Shakespeare version, because damn, that sounded like crap.
Right. That's the thing. I like to compare it to a dissection or putting a butterfly up on a tack. It's the same thing,
but
it lacks,
it's not pretty anymore.
It lacks all its spirit. There is no beauty there whatsoever. But it does have occasional notations, which I appreciate, but I don't think it's enough. I've seen, just flipping through it, I've seen two or three, and I would imagine there are far more allusions to classical literature and stuff like that that people would like to see.
It's definitely useful for helping people to understand the play.
Mm-hmm. There are certainly lines where today no one has it's almost impossible to understand without research.
Yeah.
Another thing about No Fear Shakespeare is that many lines in Shakespeare have multiple interpretations. No kidding. This obviously limits it to one interpretation. I assume it's usually a literal interpretation, just saying exactly what it is and moving on. So yeah, if you want to get Shakespeare for absolutely free, it's out there because Shakespeare is long past any copyright. So Wikipedia has all the works of Shakespeare. It's not technically Wikipedia. I believe it's Wikisource.
Is it? But it's owned by the same company, right?
Yeah, Wikipedia links you to Wikisource.
Right.
Because Wikipedia is just encyclopedia articles, while Wikisource is public access documents. Another free way that you can have it, I'm sure there's all sorts of software that has...
Yeah.
All the works of Shakespeare, because it's free. It's all out there. It's all digitized. If you want to get it on something portable, there's an iPod app that you can get that has all the works on Shakespeare. It's searchable. The search function isn't that great because I was looking for the, what a piece of work is a man. And so I searched for man and work, and it only shows you the first instance it appears in each play.
Oh, that's...
So you have to go through each play and all their instances of the word, and so it took me a while to find the speech. But it's better than nothing. It's better than no search feature.
There are better search features, though.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's a better one for iPod yet, but there might be.
And, of course, if you don't have an iPod or can't afford one, you can always just go out and steal the books from somebody.
Obviously.
Or print them off the internet at the library.
Or you could just go to the library and borrow it. The library that we have here has...
Here in...
yeah, the library has many Shakespeare plays. I didn't see all of them there. I was just there yesterday.
I picked up Cardenio.
From the past?
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do. You guys all know who Kenneth Branagh is, right?
I do.
He's the who makes all the Shakespeare films.
I thought you liked him.
I do.
Oh.
Yeah, I can still like it.
Oh, okay. That's really hard.
And he's also directing the upcoming Thor film.
Yeah, I was joking that it's going to be 4 hours long and have every single line in any Thor comic ever produced.
Yeah.
I guess since this is an educational type thing, I should explain that. Kenneth Branagh put a version of Hamlet out that is four hours long.
Oh, my God.
And it has... There are four different versions of Hamlet that exist, and it includes every single line from each copy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it avoids duplicates. It isn't just running through the play four times.
No. Have you seen it?
I don't think so.
I have.
I've seen the Mel Gibson Hamlet.
Oh, Mel Gibson Hamlet is terrible.
I don't remember it other than that he looks goofy in it.
No, but
and he's obviously too old for Hamlet, but that's a different...
The Kenneth Branagh Hamlet, it's... much more fanciful setting. Like everything's white rooms, and the palace is all shiny and bright.
I don't know that I like that part.
I enjoyed it. Robin Williams plays the guy who opens the door at the end.
Oh, cool! I'm just saying that I'm not sure I like the idea that everything's shiny and bright. It's an interesting interpretation.
It's also set in winter, but I think that was the case with the original Hamlet.
I don't believe it says the season, and also Hamlet takes place over many years.
It does?
At least a long time.
I assumed it all happened in a week.
No, he goes away on a boat and is taken prisoner by pirates and goes to England and all that business.
The great forgotten Shakespeare scene.
Well, you don't see any of that.
Well, no, it was in the original play.
He was making up Shakespeare plays?
Oh, yeah. I mean, isn't that what our job is? To confuse the viewers?
Oh, and to make up new... And to write new plays, or at least scenes in them.
But anyways, aside from that, basically, it's pretty... good until the end when he's fighting Laertes, and they're just going through, like, they have three different sword fights with three different types of swords.
Wow, that's unnecessary.
Well, in the original, we were doing, like, three-touch combat, you know? And this, they change it to three-touch combat, except every time they get a touch, they switch weapons.
And it takes forever?
Yeah, and then at the end, basically, well, I'm gonna, spoiler alert, Hamlet kills Laertes and Claudius. Here's how he kills Claudius.
Yeah.
One, he throws his sword down the end of the hall, impales Claudius to his throne.
That's
two,
how
grabs the chandelier and swings down there. Three, picks up the goblet full of poison wine and pours it down his throat.
Now, in the real Hamlet, he does put the goblet down his throat, right? That's how he actually kills him?
Probably, I don't remember. Is there a Shakespeare video game or anything? Because that'd be pretty fun.
I don't know of any. You'd think they'd done some in the 80s when they had all those crazy
videos. Oh, I know there's like a manga version of some Shakespeare plays.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure that's
true. I've seen Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet.
Oh, I've also seen this absolutely awful American version of the comic where Macbeth says, "Is this a dagger I see before me?" And they actually have a dagger in front of him. The entire point is that there's not a dagger in front of him.
Maybe it was a metaphorical image.
Oh, one more thing about films.
Oh, yeah. Well, a few more things about films.
Okay. We're going to talk about films as we go to the specific plays.
Yeah.
For A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is our next podcast, I've watched two films.
Which one?
I've watched the 1999.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Okay, it's got...
Kevin Klein as Bottom, who does a great job.
It's also got Gwyneth Paltrow...
Okay, I know which one you're talking about. I've seen a poster. I haven't seen the movie.
And Batman.
Christian Bale. The good Batman.
Yeah, and it's an easy way to remember who the pairs of people are because the ugly people get paired together, and then the people that can't act get paired together. You can tell who's going to end up together at the end.
Okay.
I also watched the 1935 Midsummer Night's Dream.
Is that
Dream.
One with Laurence Olivier?
No.
Oh,
it's got
Patrick Stewart?
It's got Cagney. As Bottom.
Really?
It's got Cagney as Bottom, and it's got Mickey Rooney at the age of, I think, 12 playing Puck.
Huh.
And it turns out this is one of Mickey Rooney's first films. Mickey Rooney is the longest performing film actor in history. He's been acting for 81 years.
How old is he now?
It's got to be 89 or 90, somewhere around there now. Yeah, it's unbelievable. So you were going to say something else about films?
Oh, yeah. Aside from the standard versions like Hamlet and whatever, there's also adaptations. Like there's
Yes.
There's a couple Japanese films by Kurosawa. There's Throne of Blood, which is basically Macbeth, but in Japan.
Right.
And then there's Ron, which is King Lear, but in Japan.
I think in America...
Oh, and also the daughters are now sons.
I think in America, those would still have the name of Hamlet or whatever, and they would just move to some wacky setting.
Not always.
Unless they did for Romeo and Juliet with...
Oh, with Leo?
Yeah, exactly. Although that was a line-for-line remake with just a different setting.
Which was intriguing.
So that's kind of a halfway point.
If the movie had been better, that would have been a pretty good movie.
English language is so influenced by Shakespeare. And it's influenced by Shakespearean dialogue, which is our next subject. Mm. Since we're talking about reading Shakespeare, understanding Shakespeare, I thought we should run through a few words that he uses all the time.
Words that people think of when they think of Shakespeare.
Well, not necessarily, but definitely words that they use a lot.
Like forsooth. That's a Shakespeare word.
Absolutely.
No one says forsooth today.
It's an old-timey
but
word.
But they when people hear it, think, oh, Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm. It means in truth or indeed. The thing that probably comes up the most that we don't use nowadays is the second person, but it shows that you're close to them. English language doesn't have this anymore. English language doesn't use thee, thou, or thine anymore.
Thank God.
Other romance languages do. There's do and...
It's annoying. It's not necessary.
Thee, thou, and thine is basically you or yours. There is no important difference. Grammatically, there are some situations where you wouldn't use it, but you're not trying to imitate Shakespeare, you're just trying to read Shakespeare. So, another word that you'll see a lot, especially in Shakespeare parodies, more than even in Shakespeare, is the word marry. This is with an A instead of an E, marry, like the marrying someone.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean to marry someone, it means indeed. So, forsooth and marry both mean...
Indeed.
If you're just reading Shakespeare, you'll see the letter A with an apostrophe after it. I don't actually know how they pronounce this.
But whenever you're reading Shakespeare and you come across the A apostrophe, it just means he.
So if you know your Romeo and Juliet, you'll know the word anon.
Means tomorrow.
No, it doesn't.
What?
It means soon.
It could also mean tomorrow. Like, tomorrow is soon.
Right, that's true, but that's not the definition. Another thing that is in Romeo and Juliet is, but soft, what light upon the window breaks?
Yon window.
Yon window?
Yeah.
It is...
basically, that window.
It is the dawn, and Juliet is the sun. Very pretty. And so, but soft means shut up or quiet.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And they say that in more than just Romeo and Juliet. It comes up every once in a while.
Yeah.
So, here's something that I just did a little research on. Hold out your hand, like fingers pointing out, and take your ring finger and your middle finger and put them down.
Throw up the horns, you know, metal style.
Like you're doing the rock horns, except bring your thumb over to your middle finger and ring finger, too. So you've got your pinky finger and your index
throw
finger
up
sticking
the horns.
Out, like you're throwing the horns. Now, if you did this in a lot of places in Europe, you might get slapped in the face.
Yep.
Because
Europeans hate Americans.
That too. They also hate rock. But more importantly, Europeans don't like you to imply that their significant other is cheating on them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you literally put your hands behind their head with that gesture, like you were giving them horns, that would be a pretty big insult, because it means that their wife is cheating on them.
This could also be the origination of the bunny ears people do in photographs.
It could be. I mean, it's also just being silly goofiness. So whenever anyone in Shakespeare refers to someone giving someone else horns...
It means they're sleeping with their wife.
Exactly. There's this idea that Shakespeare had some fantastic vocabulary, and not only did he have a fantastic vocabulary, but that the English language was insufficient for his massive... writing ability.
Yep.
I've heard someone say that people of the time, an average person, had a vocabulary of 300 words.
That's bullshit.
Sorry,
that is not accurate.
Yeah, it's simply not possible.
You, me,
yeah,
baby make.
Even that's the best example of why that's a problem. It's just ridiculous, the idea that they would have 300 words and that Shakespeare somehow towered above them. There are a bunch of studies of Shakespeare's vocabulary. I have here Bill Bryson's book, Shakespeare, The World is Stage, which is absolutely fantastic. If you're looking for just a simple, short description of Shakespeare's life and his works, I don't think you can top it.
I've read it.
About 200 pages. This guy called Marvin Spivak did a study of all the words that Shakespeare ever used and found 29,066, but that includes variations. So if you, it includes take, takes, taketh, taken, taken, takest, taked. You know, just derivations of the same word. So obviously people wouldn't count that. So according to this, if you reduce that to one word, all the variations of take, you end up with about 20,000 words, which compared to a person today, according to this, has 50,000 words. So I don't think that Shakespeare is an example of some fantastic, towering vocabulary.
He's got a pretty good one, though.
Right. He has an excellent vocabulary. It's more important how he uses it. Shakespeare loves puns and wordplay.
Yes, he does.
He probably loves them more than writing plays.
Yeah.
I mean, just everywhere you look...
He's ridiculous.
He'll have people that have serious business to do...
Still making puns.
Just going back and forth. An important thing to know with Shakespearean dialogue and language is the way things rhymed, especially because Shakespeare will go several pages of dialogue all rhyming. It's really impressive if you look that he manages to progress a plot and have rhyming dialogue for that long. And the thing with his rhyming is that oftentimes it doesn't rhyme today. Bryson points out that to Shakespeare, the words knees, grease, grass, and grace could be used as rhyming. He could rhyme reason and raisin, Rome and room, fast and haste, bone and gone, entreats and frets, plague, wage.
Yep.
The rhyming is not the same as today. One that shows up all the time is rhyming the word, the suffix "ly," like excellently.
Yep.
With the word "I."
Yeah.
Like my eye in my head. You'll see that all the time. So a few things that you'll see in Shakespeare's works because of his time is he avoids religion.
Mostly, not entirely.
He'll have people mention religion, but he never has people debate which religion is right.
And some of the characters are religious.
Obviously, he'll have cardinals.
Oh, and Shylock's a Jew.
Yeah, the cardinal in Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Wolsey.
Yeah.
I played him once in a thing.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
I remember that, yeah. Yeah. Ooh, kind of sucked.
One thing that we should always keep in mind of Shakespeare is that he's a shameless suck-up.
Oh my, yes. Though that was almost required.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely the spirit of the times to suck up to social superiors.
Yep.
And obviously, the most superior person is Elizabeth I.
Followed by James I.
Obviously. I don't know of anything where he actually praises James I directly, though.
I think a lot of it's allusion.
I just don't know what
like,
I mean.
Wasn't... I think Macbeth is,
It's in Scotland.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that they date it to after James' succession.
Yeah.
So, he praises Elizabeth I, James I.
And various other social superiors.
In and out of the plays. And dedications to his plays suck up to the people who presumably are giving him money to write the plays.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just shameless. It's just saying, you are the greatest person on earth. I couldn't be more indebted to you.
Mm-hmm.
We try to have news and emails and comments on our weblog. Just recently, so Christopher Moore.
He's a good author.
Popular author. I haven't read anything of his.
You should.
Okay. Anything in particular?
You should read Lamb, which is basically the story of Jesus told by his childhood best friend, Biff.
That sounds interesting. So the book that we're talking about today is called Fool. It's the story of King Lear.
From the fool's point of view.
Yep, and I've heard that it's pretty profane. According to the little inset here, it says, this is a bawdy tale. Here you will find gratuitous shagging, murder, spanking, maiming, treason, and unexplored heights of vulgarity and profanity, as well as non-traditional grammar and split infinitives. So
I hate the split infinitives. I don't even know what they are, but I hate them.
It's to boldly go. It's when you insert an adjective or an adverb inside two verb.
Okay.
In Latin, any two verb was one word. Mm-hmm. And so people trying to learn Latin learn not to split infinitives.
Hey, Latin, you can suck it. Yeah. You're dead. You know why you're dead? Because you're a crappy language.
Exactly. There are way more problems with Latin than there are with English, and that's saying something. And anyone out there who thinks that splitting infinitives is a problem, it's not. It's an arbitrary rule that does not hinder understanding, which is the point of communication.
Right. But we need to employ our English professors so we keep these rules around.
Yeah. I found online this pretty funny list of things not to do when you're making a Shakespeare production.
Yeah.
I think that we could say a few of them.
Okay.
The first one on the list is pretty great. The ghost of Hamlet's father will not be played by the entire ensemble underneath a giant piece of diaphanous black material. That's a pretty good rule.
Yeah.
And presumably these are all things that have actually been performed.
Oh, yeah. That's the assumption I'm making from this, too.
Some of these things are awesome that anyone would even think of doing something this bad.
I will not use long red ribbons to represent blood, particularly if the long red ribbons bear an unnerving resemblance to pasta.
Macbeth will not wear a kilt that goes past his shins. That is a skirt.
And a lot of these are like in-jokes you only understand if you've actually read these plays. Like, yeah. I will not cast actresses as Helena and Hermia who are the same height.
Another good example in here, which I don't know where it is, so I'll just say it off of memory. It talks about the two semi-identical twins in Twelfth Night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it says, I will not...
Great.
Yeah, so it's a man and a woman that are twins, but they're not identical because they're a man and a woman, but they look identical.
Yeah.
That's for the purposes of the plot. One dresses like a man, and everyone thinks it's the same person.
It's pretty great. I mean, it's really funny because the actors would, either way, both be male at the time.
Oh, yeah. He loves... double cross-dressing.
A man dressing as a woman dressing as a man.
That is one of his favorite things. He does it in almost all of his comedies.
Yep.
Okay, so you've got these semi-identical twins, and it was saying you should not cast a 6'6 man with a full beard and a 5'4 woman that is very bosomy as those two characters and pretend that no one notices.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's sad. That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
I'm sure casting is a problem to find two people that look similar, but at least try to have the guy shave.
At least try.
Yeah, at least have the guy shave. So another thing that you can find on our weblog, which is bardcast.blogspot.com, is Hamlet, the Facebook edition.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I think we both think it's pretty funny. It's acting like a Facebook news feed. But it's the entire story of Hamlet.
Yeah, so like, Hamlet thinks Ophelia might be happier in a convent. Ophelia removed moody princes from her interests.
Oh, this is a good one. Polonius says Hamlet's crazy. Crazy in love!
Hamlet posted an event. A play that's totally fictional and in no way about my family.
Hamlet becomes a fan of daggers.
Yeah, it's pretty good. We won't spoil the ending for you.
So this is a real piece of news. Right around now... is the 400th anniversary of the publication of Shakespeare's sonnets.
That would be interesting if it were about anything but his sonnets.
Wow, you're so harsh on his sonnets.
Sorry. If he wants to come and personally defend them to me, then I'll accept that.
It's the only thing that you'll respect.
Yeah.
So we'll have a link to a news story on the bardcast.blogspot.com.
400 years.
Yep, it's pretty cool. Just a while ago, there was Shakespeare Day, Talk Like Shakespeare Day.
I'm just waiting for Act Like a Time Traveler Day.
Oh, that should be good, too. And you could be Shakespeare.
I could,
yeah.
But I won't.
So, something that I just wanted to mention really quickly is there's a canceled TV show called This American Life. This American Life is one of my favorite podcasts. I think it's probably the best in terms of production quality, if nothing else.
Okay.
They had a TV show that ran two seasons, and their last episode is called John Smith, and it looks at seven different people named John Smith and acts as though it's one story. Of a single man, because they're different ages.
Yeah.
There's a baby, there's an 8-year-old, there's a 23-year-old, and it goes up to a guy that I believe is 86, it doesn't matter. As far as I can tell, they chose seven people because of All the World's a Stage speech.
Yeah.
Where he talks about the seven ages of man. It's the seven different ages that Shakespeare talks about is what they're showing here.
Okay.
And for a bit of humor, one of our fans wrote, gave us hey, he's a fan.
Okay, sure.
So he said,
I'm just amused by the idea that we have fans.
Yeah, he sent us a link to a pretty funny YouTube video where Rowan Atkinson, the guy from Blackadder and Mr. Bean,
yep,
and Hugh Laurie,
the guy from Blackadder and House.
Yeah, I had forgotten that he was in Blackadder.
Mm-hmm.
Rowan Atkinson playing this editor and House playing as Shakespeare argue back and forth about how they're going to cut down Hamlet because the editor doesn't like it being 5 hours long, which is even worse than modern Hamlet.
Yeah.
And Shakespeare is fighting for every little detail, and it just
It's very amusing.
Oh, yes, very amusing. Okay, so that's it for reading Shakespeare.
Yep, enjoy your life after this point, I guess.
You can visit our website at bardcast.blogspot.com. Our next episode is about A Midsummer Night's Dream. Bardcast.blogspot.com is a website they can go to and vote for the subject that we do after A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yep, and then which play we'll do it next, and so on and so forth.
We're going to have voting for all sorts of things. Once we've chosen between Shakespeare's life and the authorship question, the next thing we're going to put up is whether we should talk about a romance, a history, or a comedy, or I guess a tragedy. When you go to the website, please leave comments, please vote. Please link us to more videos, anything like that, because we really
enjoy
it.
Feel free to send us harassing emails talking about how great Shakespeare's sonnets were.
Yeah, if we've done anything right, if we've done anything wrong, just let us know, because...
And if anything you send in is any good, we'll mention it in the podcast.
Yeah, like we just did today.
And we'll even mention who sent it in if you ask us to.
Yeah, our fan, I guess I'll call him L-Dog.
Our only fan.
Yeah.
Other than your mom.
Yeah, L-Dog sent us the link to the... Rowan Atkinson video. So,
yep.
Oh, and we'll link people to the L blog, L Dog's blog, and drive some traffic that way. Yeah, so please, please send us messages, visit the website, bardcast.blogspot.com.
We are literally begging you.
Okay, so see you next time.